So McLuhan had a stroke on September 26, 1979. And he would be...
my birthday.
Really? Your birthday? Yeah. Took out McLuhan. Well, how old were you in 79?
Did you say the 26?
Yeah, 26.
79, I was 12. No, hang on, 77. Yeah, I was 12.
12. Okay, just before puberty. Key dramatic time for you. And
my hormones killed McLuhan.
That's right. Remember, his name begins with M2. You were in the M factor. Madeline, the M.
Mm.
And so he collapsed. He never really recovered. He could only perceive.
Same here.
What? Did you say you collapsed?
I'm sorry. I'll shut up. Yes.
You collapsed too. Okay.
I'm shutting up now. Sorry.
Yeah. Let me just say this. He couldn't speak. He couldn't write. He called it aphasia, A-P-H-A-S-I-A. Now, he and his son were in the middle of making this article to predict the 80s when he collapsed. So Eric had to finish it. I don't know how much his father could signal information, but couldn't really speak, couldn't read. What else, Carolyn? Speak, read. He could hear. He could register events. He lived in the present. But he's out of it. And the world doesn't know it. They kept it secret for 6 months or so. And I knew it because the secretary told me. And he would die a little over a year later, fall asleep on New Year's night. We were 3 weeks after John Lennon got shot. And they had met. And so people, and Reagan had just got elected. So the world was going to change because of Reagan. Mae Brussels did a recording on the anniversary of her daughter being murdered by the local mafia guy in 1970. So here it is, December 80, and she's talking about the significance of two 60s icons, McLuhan and John Lennon, being killed because she says Reagan and them, they didn't like the 60s, and they're going to take the world away from whatever the effect of the 60s was. So in the midst of that, out comes this article. And Jermaine has not come back, unfortunately.
So it's Marshall McLuhan's last published article, Predictions for the 80s?
Yes. There were a couple of articles. Listen to this. There were a couple of academic articles that
trickled out. That's the Bob Dobbs
quote. What? What are you saying? Don't mumble.
I'm quoting you directly and starting the article. Is that where it starts on the page?
And it says, Marshall McLuhan, Living at the Speed of Light.
Mm-hmm.
That's the title.
And
it says, yes.
Yeah, it does start with a Bob Dobbs quote, yes.
Yeah, Marshall McLuhan's last published article, Predictions for the 80s, McLean's Magazine, Canada's Time, or National Magazine, I think it's January 7th. I've looked at the article enough in my mind. It's the first week of 1980. It's dated. But the important thing is, Ayatollah Khomeini has just come in, February 79. The Shah of Iran's in trouble. They're probably doing the hostage crisis is in there, isn't it? The Canadians were hostage in there. And that's when Dateline with Ted Koppel came in. So 79-80 was a radical change. Zappa had put out an album called Joe's Garage about how the government would outlaw music, and a few weeks after his album came out, the Ayatollah Khomeini banned all Western music out of Iran, and so this startling counter-70s mood started. You know, it was the Me Decade, it was punk rock, it was disco, Studio 54, it was quite a, you know, hedonistic decade. And all of a sudden, this guy shows up from the Middle Ages and starts taking over. And somewhere in there, they did the fatwa on Salman Rushdie, the novelist. So it's by late 79. Then McLuhan drops off, and that was pretty bad in a way. So the first week of January, Karen and I are in Toronto, and this comes out. So I don't know how much Eric added to it, how much it was finished when they submitted it, but, you know, he's gone by September. That gives 4 months before 1979 is over. So it starts off saying the 80s will see, and it lists a society of contented non-achievers. Now, McLuhan had said to John Lennon back in 69, so 10 years before, that Britain entered into post-World War II contentedness. Whatever people thought society was happening in Britain, McLuhan called it into the 60s. It was a time of, do-nothing content, slack. So he projects that into the 80s here, a society of contented non-achievers. He said the end of Chinese culture, the end of identity, survival by violence, by all kinds of outbursts to reassert your identity or to retrieve it or to forge a new one. The new multi-subcultural mosaic, literacy for an elite only. Right? Yeah, literacy for an elite only, education in the age of amnesia, and cubism in sports. I'm assuming cubism in sports. I'm assuming
that's so true. Think about
all
that.
Right.
In the 80s, the skateboarding became a thing.
Yeah.
Really popular. And even with hacky sacking, everything became little pods of geometric shapes and even structures to do things on. People were doing, like, that was when people started doing kind of acrobatic, daring each other to do parkour.
Now, remember,
that's
this
cool.
is 79. President Carter's, he's president. Jimmy Carter's president. He's going to be portrayed as ineffective throughout 1980 with the Iran hostage crisis and the Khomeini. Mm-hmm. So he's going to be out a year later. And McLuhan has already predicted Reagan. In 1976, he predicted Reagan would become president. He'd be the perfect president because he was an actor and he would merge with his role. Because McLuhan understood, you know, you don't have a point of view when you're president. It's like a simulation. It's a matrix. I don't mean that to be phony, but you're playing a role, and it's not this Abraham Lincoln kind of scenario. So he was predicting.
Was Reagan the governor of California when he predicted that?
Yes.
Okay.
76? No, Reagan was running for president in 76. He didn't make the cut. But if I look him up, let's just see how close to 74 as governor. Because when he becomes governor, they outlaw LSD. That's in 66. So let's see, when was he governor? 33rd governor from 67 to 75. So he spends 75 into 76 running for president. And I guess that's why McLuhan talked about him. He saw him on the horizon.
Yeah.
That this guy will be president. May not win this year, but he will be the perfect president. So McLuhan is way ahead of everybody. You know, like, imagine you're just a Canadian working guy, and you got a family or working in a union, and the 80s will see a society of contented non-achievers. What would someone think of that? That would be crazy. The end of Chinese culture. Literacy for
I kind of see the non-achieving as just kind of maintaining the status quo, just plateauing.
Yeah, okay, yeah. All right, but what McLuhan really means is software consumption is taking over. People just got so much information, cable TV, all this stuff starting to happen. They're just going to become couch potatoes and develop their TV landscape, TV body. Becomes a TV body. Okay, so with those, this is a magazine format, so I guess they had those little phrases at the top of the article. I actually have the article, but it's hidden away in the archives. So it starts off in 1968, Edmund Leach, the British anthropologist, published a little book called Runaway World. Now, I know that book, and it's in McLuhan's 1970 book, Cultures Are Business, which is an updating of his book on ads, 1951, The Mechanical Bride. So 20 years later, he's saying it's a different kind of advertising world. And he talks about Edmund Leach in that book. But here, he's saying in this book, Leach described the dislocation of British communities and families through the impact of the railway train. And he quotes from the book, "In the past, kinsfolk and neighbors gave the individual continuous moral support throughout his life," unquote. These people, all those people, neighbors, bought railway tickets for far parts of the world and were never seen again. Prior to the railway, many people spent their whole lives near to their birthplace. Quote, "always surrounded by kinsfolk, not just brothers and sisters, but uncles and aunts, cousins, nephews and nieces, and grandparents," unquote. By contrast, with the railway age, the jet age, and we've been in the jet age for about 20 years at this point, by contrast with the railway age, the jet age permits the uncles and aunts and kids to be at meetings around the world and to return home the same weekend. He's going to say, well, I'll just finish the paragraph because there's another point about the 19th century before you get into the jet age. But you're able to return home. There was a famous American novel, You Can't Go Home Again. In McLuhan's 1967 book, The Mediumist and Massage, he says you can go home again, okay? So because of the jet travel. This example of runaway technology concerns mere hardware. So he's talking about planes and jets and trains as hardware. Our own world experiences, and environment of instantaneous information, an invasion of the software, which is simultaneous for all parts of the world. If the social and psychic impact of the railway technology was to create a new service environment and to isolate nuclear families, one of the effects of instant electric information has been to isolate the individual. So the individual is going to get more and more isolated. The Walkman comes in about 1980. People start walking around, you know, listening to their recordings. But it's really important to understand that the nuclear family is a product of the railroad because everybody split, and that led to incredible tensions, McLuhan said. It's not healthy to have just mom, pop, and a couple of kids. It's too much strain. So that's where Freud came from. Freud came in to solve the tensions in this artificial situation, end of the hardware era, the isolated nuclear family. Now, when he would say that, many people, religious people, would say, no, the family's sacred, that's bullshit. So he was being quite controversial to talk about the tensions in the nuclear family. And every one of you guys here are products of the tensions in the nuclear family and are in the sad shape you are today because of that, right? Am I wrong?
I am grateful for Jung and what he provided because he took Gnosticism and applied it as a philosophy and a psychology, like a, you know, he laid out the archetypes that we have as direct tools. It's like here that
okay,
we don't.
Okay, look at Sarah. He did. Freud is a product of the railway. Jung comes in later, and he's a product of the radio. The instant, the first time everybody could be in the same space collectively. They could be in a space together on the telephone, but not collectively. So this new retrieved tribalism, it leads to the collective archetypes that Jung gets into. So Jung's a product of the radio world, a little later, right?
And I'm grateful for him. That's how I can tolerate the rest of what came before him.
Okay, now McLuhan develops a new archetype. You have to understand how McLuhan takes it further than Jung. That's an important thing to understand if you haven't got it yet. But we won't go into it right now. So this is important to get, though. And he's predicting that everybody's going to become isolated. That would be becoming a god through virtual reality and the new personalized information environment. You're able to put on cable TV and then eventually the computer world, more and more isolating the individual. So that's a pretty good prediction because he's known 20 years before for predicting the global village, but now he's predicting something else. The individual becomes isolated, and people still think McLuhan is predicting the global village and some togetherness. They stop at a certain point of understanding McLuhan, and here he is going forward with new developments. Okay, so then he says, in the 80s, there is a general awareness that the technology game is out of control and that perhaps man was not intended to live at the speed of light. Now, that might have been expressed in the peace movement. Sue Bone went to New York and went to the big, huge millions of people anti-nuclear war protests in June 1982. And there was a big, heavy anti-war movement. Maybe you were part of that, Madeline.
In the 70s, I was too little.
No, 1982.
Yeah, I was still in high school and going to school on a military base, so no.
All right.
But we did have a pretty surreal experience during that time.
Yes, because Reagan brought in Star Wars in 1983, and people are feeling paranoid. They think a Cold War is starting up again, and they're really into ecology. Ecology is now becoming accepted. People are having, you know, garbage, those garbage boxes. At least I remember that happening in Toronto, recycle boxes. So there's a general nervousness about technology. Definitely it's out of control. And people might have felt that 10 years before, but he is saying that now people will definitely feel this, the average sleepy citizen. So there's a general awareness that the technology game is out of control. And perhaps man was not intended to live at the speed of light. Nobody was thinking that. They were just thinking, nah, we got too much hardware. I don't think they were aware of the information environment in that sense, living at the speed of light as an extreme. So he says, at the speed of light, the sheer overload of data and information tends to result in pattern recognition, a new form of awareness that discredits previous forms and values. It leads to collective amnesia. Now, weren't you saying something about that, Sarah? Collective amnesia, like 12 minutes ago?
Huh. Yeah, pretty much.
Brent was. Brent brought up the collective amnesia. So what do you think of that, Brent? Oh, Brent's gone. What the fuck, Brent? Get back in here.
Right? he just came to get people to go, yeah, that was great. It was really well written, though.
Yeah, what Brent did. Mm-hmm. Yeah, what happened to him? Let's check the board. Maybe he
may be listening and not on.
Oh, he does say I'll be back later, Bob. But that's before. No. Okay. So he dropped off. Well, you have to listen to the archive. So, collective amnesia. McLuhan's predicting. I remember Jules Pfeiffer, the great cartoonist for the Village Voice. Him making jokes, cartoons in the 80s about collective amnesia. At the speed of light, the sheer overload of data and information tends to result in pattern recognition, a new form of awareness that discredits previous forms and values. So you're so involved in knowing and keeping up with what's going on that you're forgetting everything from the past.
Okay, is that a form of mass hallucination? Or is one an effect?
Well, you know, hallucination, one reason McLuhan says we hallucinate or get hypnotized when one sense is isolated and hyped up. That leads to hypnosis. Hallucination is a kind of filling in. Synesthesia, your senses are rushing in where something has been amputated. So the global theater has been going on for 10 or more years. It's pretty extreme. And then the cable TV's coming in, people are, you know, not on the same page anymore in terms of their understanding of what patterns is important. And they can't remember past patterns. So divorce is rampant. Cocaine addiction is rampant. America starts to get nuts in the late 70s, the way it's become a cliche now. And so he's telling us, he's predicting. How's that, Madeline? That's a pretty good prediction. You people are
going
into collective amnesia. That's pretty brazen, right? Your father ain't going to have a press conference announce everybody's going to collective amnesia. Now, he's well-known. He's used to media. He's used to being a spokesman. But he's on top of what's going on. I mean, Reagan, some people think Reagan was collective amnesia. And himself, as president, he later couldn't remember anything. Remember that?
Yeah.
You know, the whole thing, that was a scandal. When he had to go testify for some scandal, he'd always say, well, I don't recall what we said.
He didn't remember anything. Yeah, terrible.
So you got to look at how good this is. There's lots of people in the baby boomers. They're getting into new age stuff. They're becoming yuppies. That whole 60s mentality of baby boomers is mutated 10 years later into a weird, crazy, their kids don't like their parents, these baby boomer parents anymore. But there's a huge collective amnesia going on, and McLuhan is nailing it. This is pretty good. So then he says, actually, Western technology has been out of control since the invention of the alphabet at least 2,500 years ago. You know, once they started extending themselves into the left hemisphere, it made the West completely different from the rest of the world and became visually abstract, which was absurd for majority of the cultures around the world. They didn't have that experience. So Western technology has been out of control for 2,500 years. That is to say the Greeks, having invented and instituted the social use of the phonetic alphabet, remained unaware of its psychic and social consequences. They just swam in it as a novelty. It was neat to develop Euclidean geometry and individualism. So he says, such side effects of the phonetic alphabet as the rise of Euclidean space and geometry and Socratic logic and dialectic brought into play an intense individualism and competitive goal-seeking by private citizens. Now, you could say in Greek time, that was just among the property owners, the elites. There was still a lot of tribalism going on around everybody, but it was the beginning. And, you know, the Greek culture came up with these crazy ideas of equality before the law and all that stuff. I mean, it was pretty strange. The ensuing rampage caused by visual space and phonetic alphabet was recorded in Greek tragedy and the conquest of Alexander the Great. So McLuhan's giving you a little background. So here he's doing this journalistic article, which is geared for the intelligence of a grade 8. That's what journalism, they say, is geared for. And people are suddenly, if they're even, they're not even reading this, okay? But if they were, they'd say, what? Alexander the Great? What's that got to do with the 80s? You see? There's satire in here. McLuhan takes the event, the apparent event, okay, talking about the 80s, and he's going to run through the whole history of humanity once again, okay, with emphasizing technological determinism. So he says, by phonetic literacy, the Greeks eroded their traditional communities and substituted the private citizen and the written legal code, which was the framework of civilization, and which today is being subjected to social amnesia. So they're thinking Reagan's going to be a fascist. Well, no, they just all forgot the past. They forgot visual space. They forgot the Constitution. All right? Now, try to tell that. You know, you get on your Facebook page, Madeline, say, the reason Trump appears to be a fascist is we've got extreme collective amnesia in the Android meme. Because there's no people anymore. We're all sidelined as drone flesh. So you're watching the Android meme replay these phases. And you're watching the Android meme have amnesia right now. That's how you look at it. You could say virtual reality is having amnesia. But back then, see, this is way better than your art. This is more interesting than your art, Sarah. This guy's...
No, my art is just what I do while I'm doing that, so I don't sit still.
Okay. Why don't you go for a walk?
I do. I do. All right. I also juggle a soccer ball in the front room, and I started doing a thing where I kick at something hanging from the ceiling. Oh, it's so fun. I had no idea I could do it better with my left foot.
You're like a caged animal. He's a zoo,
yep.
A zoo victim. You're a
but I love it. No, it's got. I see what you're saying about the global village. It's a global marketplace. It's so yeah. those are compartmentalized, and then... I am in my eye cell, and I love it. And I okay. jump around when I need to or, like, do
right.
things.
Very good. And then you have these weird anomalies where the phone company calls them and says, you in particular can't phone Bob anymore. No more radio.
You can't call a radio and listen to. What? I can't even give a direct quote. I think I tried to right away, but...
Okay, back to this thing. I get all this mucus. Carolyn, the only food around here is cheese. And it creates all this mucus, for God's sake. So we've got to get Carolyn off this cheese. She's on the keto diet. They just eat cheese or something. It's all I got to eat. And So, I apologize for the mucus.
I bet.
So he's talking about we are being subjected to social media. We're going to forget all the values. Now, Madeline, people worry about Trump and all this. This was all happened 40 years ago, if anybody was paying attention, you know. You're watching the Android meme go through these paroxysms of image disaster. Not humans. They have been sidelined. It's Planet of the Dead by the 70s. That's part of the problem. It is being a kid growing up there, 12 years old. How are you supposed to fit into a society that isn't there anymore? See, that's half your problem, Madeline. And the whole rest of you. Ginny, the whole Generation X people. Were you aware of it? No, but you got it through your songs, your punk aesthetic, the nihilism of society. I mean, the way people acted in high school in the 80s is completely bonkers compared to, say, the 50s and 40s. You know?
Yeah.
Look at the incredible changes that are going on. And the mainstream media is not, they might do a story on them, but they're only talking about pro-abortion or anti-abortion. They just take these iconic things and yell about them all day long and ignore these other phenomena that's going on. So he's talking about the Greeks. Then he says, all of a sudden, we've lost all memory of the Greek culture and the phonetic alphabet. And then he jumps to China. As if by prophetic irony, the Chinese have now mounted a mandatory program of phonetic literacy, which they hope will enable them to mimic or to surpass Western achievements. Okay, this is just after Mao Zedong's died in 76, and Chu Enlai, Andy Mao guy who has different plans for China, has taken over. But we don't know what it's going to mean, and there's still a backward agricultural slave society. And here's McLuhan predicting that they are going to surpass Western achievements or attempt it, which is what they did. This is a tremendous prediction. See, this article was the only thing you should have been taught in high school. You know, if you could do a little voluntary arithmetic or something on the side. But people should have just concentrated on this article, especially 10 years later when it all came through, and figure out how did it happen. Not based on, might be, but on the surface, not based on McLuhan being a psychic. He's just looking at the technological patterns. So, pretty good. And then he then says in China, in fact, this program ensures complete destruction of several thousand years of culture and traditions far richer than the tribal heritage destroyed by the Greeks when they introduced the civilizing force of the alphabet into their culture. Civilizing is a technical term. Doesn't mean they're better. Mm-hmm. It means they're going to be completely different and visually biased, non-barbarians is what civilizing force means. But he's saying China's going to have it worse. What do you think of that, people? These are pretty big statements.
Well, he was right about China.
Yeah. Yeah. Hey, look, Atreo, is that the guy that used to be a pain in the neck? He's come in. I haven't seen that name in a long time, a couple of years. Trey, this is Trey. You have something to say, Trey?
Not yet.
Okay. I hope you're learning from this article. So he's predicting what China will become. So I'm trying to tell you exactly where it was in 79. I have a good memory for these things. I know exactly the mood. I know that China was not on the radar screen yet. And here's McLuhan saying they are going to become more Western than we were. They're going to adopt Western space because they're a tactile culture, but tactility has been extended by the global theater, so the extension of tactility is a threat to all cultures, including the Chinese, so they're running, trying to become West, to put on a Western shield, and the West itself is getting into third world and Asian cultures. But who would be... Think of that guy, Spalding Gray. He talks, you ever heard of him? He would do these performance pieces in New York and talk about his trips in Asia. And they would have, he did this in the 80s, and so you'd be talking about traveling around Asia after Vietnam War in the 70s. So he was a symptom of what many people did. They traveled to non-Western cultures because they were looking and trying to respond to the new tactile effect that had been extended. So the West goes east, and the East goes West. And so McLuhan, he was saying this about China back in the 60s, but now he's even, getting more bold about it. So then he says, the small oral society of the Greeks went bananas when they released the uninhibited power of the rational and competitive individual in a kind of atomic fission. The Chinese, by contrast, now represent one of the largest population groups in one of the richest world cultures. The irresponsible, he's telling the Chinese, you're so irresponsible. The irresponsible application of our alphabet to their culture dooms them to an even greater explosion via individual aggression and enterprise than anything the Western world has done.
That's so true. And the fallout of that is beautiful.
What's the fallout? What are you referring to? The fallout of
I can. I'll remember to talk about it when you're done.
Right. So China by the 90s starts bursting forth, and then you can overlay the Ionic history. That's when they got the ET contact and got this advanced technology. But putting that aside, who's going to believe that? Just look at. We know China just took over. Now it owns the world, and it's moving out under the guise of beating the poor and getting into Africa and South America. But, of course, the Pentagon's going to get all paranoid about this and say it's really bad that China's expanding. But the general trend of China becoming what it never did 500 years ago, it did not have the effect of the phonetic alphabet. It did not want to expand. It had the biggest armada of boats, and they went to Africa around 1500. And they looked around and said, screw this, and they retreated back to their time-bound dynasty, land-bound, and waited for the world to, I would say catch up to them. But from the West point of view, they just retreated, made themselves economically backward. And then all of a sudden they explode out of that. Okay, so the Chinese, by contrast, now represent one of the largest population groups and one of the richest world cultures. Their irresponsible application of the phonetic alphabet led to individual aggression and enterprise than anything the Western world has ever experienced. Although it took several centuries to eliminate the order of Greek oral culture, so we're going back 2,500 years, that is to eliminate the world of Homer, this could occur in China under electronic conditions in a single generation. The 80s will see the first act of this scenario of China going west. And that's pretty good timing. He's saying it's not going to take several centuries, but it's not going to happen, by 1981. It's going to take a while, but we're witnessing the first act. So what do you think of this, Ginny? Ginny's here. Pretty smart talk, eh, Ginny? Or Greg? Where is everybody? Anyways, here we are, the most amazing documents you're ever going to hear by a human being. We're discussing it, and we can't get any response. Let's see. What do you think of this stuff, Carol?
Awesome, Bob.
See, I read this as soon as it came out. Like, I'd be there going, wow, this is fucking amazing. And, I was processing it. This put me ahead of everybody just by paying attention to this and thinking about it and learning what it means. And in 79, McLuhan is out of touch at this point. I can't go and talk to McLuhan about it because he's got the aphasia and he's going to be dead in a year or so. So he does go out with a great flash, though, here. So then, now back to the 80s in the West. That was 80s in the East, in China. The 80s in the West will witness a dramatic increase in the conservative backlash against runaway technology and change. The whole conservative, the neoconservative thing that happened. Also, you have the eco-freaks, deep ecology, those people that were, chopping down trees or saving trees and putting metals in the big redwoods, and then they'd kill the lumbermen. Okay, so he's predicting a reaction, and a violent reaction across the political spectrum. This can be seen as This doesn't necessarily mean conservative, neoconservative stuff, though he predicted that 10 years before that America would flip into visual values, an attempt to retrieve visual values. It would be a simulation, but that's begun with Reagan. But the hatred of technology, which was just expressed by...
Yeah, so Bob, the spiking of trees is an attempt to preserve first nature as a reaction to the overtaking of second nature?
Yep.
Okay. Because it's not a direct, it's not like smashing electronics, but it's preserving.
It's iconic.
What was there before electronics.
Everybody, by then, a lot of the baby boomers and Greenpeace are aware of the media. It's like Zappa around there says, the media is all there is. So people know that we have to communicate through the media. And so they invent iconic ways to get attention, and they think that...
Right, they were pulling stunts, yeah.
Yeah, and they were doing the Yippie Abbie Hoffman pranksters of 1968. They redid it on a mass level, and they thought that communicating a message would subliminally brainwash people into, oh, yeah, they'd see the wisdom of it and immediately stop whaling hunting and all that. They didn't understand that you're beginning to see the Android meme, and it's communicating among itself, and humans aren't really responding to messages. They're just trying to survive a massage, a global theater massage. So the naivety about what's the effect of becoming iconic. So these guys...
They respond to the messages by parroting them as a means of virtue signaling, but not really changing any behaviors.
Yeah, that's a good word, signaling. A lot of signaling going on in all parts of the... Nobody's going to... How do you change your behavior? You'd have to turn off a good chunk of electric environment to change our behavior.
Then you wouldn't be in society anymore.
Right. Well, you wouldn't be in the present situation. Now, you might be able to take it, but you can't get a consensus in politics to agree to turn off the electric environment or half of it. You can't solve it unless you have a dictator come in who says, fuck you, I'm turning it off, just so we can look at what we're doing to ourselves. And the CIA was there to kill you if you tried that. So it's Planet of the Dead. You got a lot of more and more average people becoming socially concerned, wearing mankind on their sleeve, the old McLuhan phrase, and worried about nature and ecology, which was an effect of the satellite environment. The old planet becomes a sacred art form. We must preserve it. And you want to preserve some of the ancient tribal institutions. All this impulse, this...
Bob, it's not just a story, though. I mean, people were getting sick. Three Mile Island happened around then and all this other stuff.
Yeah.
Or maybe they didn't get sick until they were told that they would get sick.
Right. In March 79, many months, a year before almost, is Three Mile Island. And the China Syndrome movie comes out, timed with it. And LaRouche is writing, this is a conspiracy. This is British intelligence trying to get everybody to hate new technology. So LaRouche was taking a top-down conspiracy view of it. McLuhan was looking at the bottom up. It was confirming what he said. He said people are going to become ecological freaks. 10 years before that, he said. Now, they are becoming freaks. They're getting really... worried, and they want to preserve something, and they think their bureaucratic agendas can...
Well, they want to preserve
it.
Their lives, which is they're viewing it as being dependent upon the Earth, I thought.
Yeah,
the health of Earth is tied to the health of us.
Their health, right. And McLuhan's already saying 20 years before that nature dies. There's no nature once you have Sputnik. But nobody is even hearing him say that. He's not as famous anymore. He's not quoted that much by journalists like he was in the 60s. So here he is being very accurate and wise, and no one's paying attention to it. I mean, he has a bit of a reputation in Canada. The McLean says, okay, if you want to know what's going to happen in the 80s, get a hold of McLuhan. But nobody does anything about this article. It just happens, and it's gone. And what's the – okay, so Carolyn, people – are getting allergies. I have it on my chart. What's the hypoglycemia?
Yeah.
What are the first syndromes? Not chronic fatigue. I think it's
autoimmune.
Not allergy. No, that's
it
later.
Was allergy. Hypoglycemia.
Chronic fatigue
and
was 90s.
Was
Just they're basically just getting irritated.
Yeah, because this is what I told Bob about my practice, how I watch the development of these layers of chronic illness. And it started with...
I would like to hear that overlaid with this.
Well, it's in my chart. I took what Carolyn said, and I laid it out chronologically.
I remember that.
Get up here.
Carolyn, did you... do you now look back and think that you can think of a time where you almost witnessed a cultivation of yeast overgrowth in the population? Is that too many words? Because I just feel like I've lived with that my whole life. And to have management of that personally is a really big deal.
Yeah. To a certain extent, but also chronic fatigue was something that I absolutely observed. I think yeast was definitely around before when I started practicing in 79, because antibiotics had come in what, the 40s and 50s, and immediately they recognized yeast overgrowth as a side effect, but they never addressed it.
Right, Karen, so... I forgot to mention that Carol starts her practice on June 25th, 1979. He's going to give the B-cell to McLuhan in September, and a week later he has a stroke. Carol's starting to rock.
Carol's fault.
Yes, the ISIS factor.
I know. I was in his house, and I killed him.
So in my chart, for the LaRouche quadrant, 1960, lung cancer. Okay, that's becoming a big problem. And then by 1965, mid-60s, heart disease, which McLuhan later would say was caused by the isolation of everybody getting lonely and unwanted. And then I have, by 1970, Carol, environmental allergies.
Mm-hmm.
Then by 1980, you've got chronic fatigue, so right around the time of this article. And then I have, by 1990, immune deficiency. That's the sequence.
Mm-hmm.
Allergies, chronic fatigue, and immune deficiency. So environmental allergies fits in with McLuhan's prediction, because perverse humans are getting affected by the satellite and looking at hardware as ugly, and they're addicted to software, but it's all just a blur, and they're just pissed off at their cities and technological life, and they get neurotic. They focus on different psychosomatic aspects, and they get nutty about their allergies.
Yeah.
So McLuhan is predicting that by saying the outrage against technology. He doesn't say it leads to allergies, but he's explaining how it's leading that way, if you believe McLuhan. So he says, conservative backlash against runaway technology and change, conservative meaning conserving, doesn't mean just right-wingers, excessive speed of change isolates already fragmented individuals, and the accelerated process of adaptation takes too much vitality out of communities. Nobody can keep up with this. That's why people start getting stressed out, Carolyn, and the kind of patient, the profile you got, is because nobody has a human dimension happening, because people are, it's planet of the dead. It's going to start showing up.
Total body meltdown. That's good, Carolyn. For the coining that.
Yeah.
Yeah, then the next sentence. By sheer attrition, the social group is reduced to the conditions of an anemic individual without the energy to adapt to the demands of survival. Wow, that's chronic fatigue, Carolyn.
Mm-hmm.
He did predict almost like a disease level here.
Mm-hmm.
By sheer attrition, the social group, you know, which has no community, is reduced to the conditions of an anemic individual without the energy to adapt to the demands of survival. And by the 90s, everybody does that at some point in the 80s, right? They may come out of it, but everybody collapses. That's where the phrase burnout comes in. Right, Carol? So here's McLuhan predicting burnout. Now, that's fucking incredible. Now, here I am reading this, trying to tell Carol, but she's too busy being a doctor and can't get the big level I'm talking about.
I'm too busy treating the problem.
Right. She's treating the problem. She has pretty good answers. And I'm saying, well, this is why it's happening. Nobody's listening to me. Okay. And, you know, it's going to be gone, so then it's up to me to spread the word. What?
Nothing. Go ahead. Listening.
Okay. Now, let's see if we got everybody unmuted. Yep. In 1957, when Sputnik went around our planet, putting the planet inside a new information environment, there sprang up an immediate new holistic awareness that was called ecology. With it, that would be Rachel Carson's book, 1963, right?
Oh, yeah.
The figure for this subliminal effect that nobody's going to notice till about Earth Day, 1970. But McCoon's talking about it in the early 60s. When it came the need, no, with Sputnik came the need for programming environments. That meant it was Orwellian, that there were such huge environments that the Federal Reserve had to take over, the policing of, it's like Mussolini's idea back in the 30s, you know, at least he kept the trains running on time. That's what's happening collectively and agreed upon, that there's just too much people embedded in these huge environments that they must, you don't start yelling, I need my freedom of speech or my freedom of this, freedom of expression. All these freedoms are irrelevant when the global tetrad manager's got to program the environment. And that includes allowing dope traffic to happen so the banks can have cash flow because the electric information is evaporating cash. So that whole thing of the CIA using the dope dealers and keeping that cash going, that's a big scandal, but that's part of programming the environment. It's beyond human values. So he says,
yeah, my understanding is that it wasn't so much allowing as cultivating it.
Well, they didn't. What can you do if you're ahead of the CIA or the national security thing? You can't stop this situation. Technology is under control. I mean, you can make an attempt to somehow, and maybe putting in all those dictatorships was an attempt to slow down change by the Rockefellers, you know. But Rockefeller told me through the Evergreens that it didn't work. They couldn't stop it. And Rockefeller says, you know, the genie was out of the box back in the Renaissance, which McCoon takes it further back than Rockefeller. And it's part of the same panel. I'm talking to Rockefeller and McLuhan as ghosts in 1995 about this stuff. And Rockefeller says it got out of control with the printing press. But McLuhan says, no, it started back 2,000 years before with the alphabet. Anyways.
So, Bob, we haven't heard those 95 Evergreen panels, have we? We've heard panels with Ion. Huh?
Yeah, you just look, if I go over to Ion and Bob, just look under Evergreens, Bob's Private Session Evergreens. They're all there. You can listen to them.
Okay.
I'm pretty sure that one's posted. I did two all group right. ones, and then I did one with James Joyce in 95. So here it is. See, this is sober talk. McLuhan is being the wise elder of the tribe, of the human tribe. He's talking about what fucking really matters.
It's good advice. And right there,
yeah.
This applies to me.
Yeah.
Maybe I haven't done such a bad job with my art, Bob. Maybe it will be an example for other people how you can survive
you
this.
You do not.
Because I survived
there,
through
okay.
that. I survived through
yeah,
people
yeah,
breaking
sure,
down
yeah.
through that. That was supposed
you
to
only
be.
Survived when the second coming happened. Our product saved you. So it wasn't for us.
Oh.
It's not even registered in the consciousness
yeah.
yet.
Yes.
You would not be here. You would not be brave.
Yeah, I haven't even survived yet. Right.
Okay. With Sputnik came the need for programming, you put that in quotes, programming environments and for the study of effects of existing technologies. It's required to start looking at the effects of these massive environments. At the same time, the new instant information environment intensified the loneliness and desperation of the individual through the impersonal proximity of everybody to everybody. Because we're all in the global membrane and all squished like angels on the head of a pin in this non-visual space, it makes everybody feel lonely. That's the effect of everybody impersonally in touch with everybody else. And this is before the Internet. At the same time, the new instant information environment intensified the loneliness and desperation of the individual through the impersonal proximity of everybody to everybody. Proximity is not community, says McLuhan. As he calls, mm-hmm. he takes over in all fields of human activity in the 80s, so he's predicting variations of ecology, and you see that in all the therapeutic things, sociological analysis. Every kind of change poses a pollution threat, Carolyn. See, there's you're starting to get allergies.
Yeah.
Every kind of change, technological change, poses a pollution threat.
That's
and then he says, at,
really
that's
good. That's really right. good if taken together, though. But that's not what's happening necessarily for a reader here. That it's good. That's an interesting point.
Right, and then he has, look up the etymology of pollution. It doesn't have any other words, just as reference in brackets, etymology of pollution. Then I McLuhan says, everybody will come to feel that his job, his family, his pension, and his very identity are threatened by every kind of change. At the speed of light, everything affects everything. There are no neutral areas. Even at the relatively sedate speed of 50,000 miles an hour, the Pioneer spacecraft can be demolished by a speck of dust. Living at the speed of light, we ourselves feel equally vulnerable and insecure. So there's this whole paranoia happening in the 80s, and that's why people like Mae Brussel, Dr. Beaton Roosh, they looked rather brave. They were ignoring all this increased neurotic caution that citizens were taking and just getting out there and saying, Kissinger's fucking causing this. Now, they didn't have a handle on McLuhan's level, but they were acting out the old individualist mandate of the brave prophet there in their local media. And they're up against incredible apathy. Nobody cared about what May said or LaRouche said. What?
Listen, Bob, this is the answer to Jermaine's question and your question earlier. The reason it's important for people when they step down is because they're bequeathing titles to a chosen person, and they're still a consultant for them and things like that. But in any case, there's a...
Wait, no, you need to clarify that. What you're saying, they step down. Who steps down?
The fashion icon that
okay.
y'all two were talking about earlier.
Yeah, and then you're saying the consulting takes over?
They're allowing someone else to take over. And that's a good way of dealing with this.
Well, they'll take over the bureaucracies, which will be hopeless.
I'm saying, by me choosing to follow people like Mae Brussel and just kind of live life, or Carolyn, and live life by their example instead of necessarily by exactly what they're saying, or at both, to do
right.
both of those things, that's
a
good way
of
approaching life now, and I'm lucky to have those kinds of tools.
Okay, I'll say something after the meeting.
Thanks.